Mini episode 264 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special mini-episode of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We are here to talk summer movies, and specifically this is going to be sci-fi movies and comic book type movies for this summer. Some of the biggest blockbusters that are going to be on the screens during the summer months. And we have a great panel here today. It is a very, very knowledgeable one, to be sure. The two gentlemen are going to be on today as part of this with myself, Paul Pasek and Jason Jones. Paul Pasek is a longtime member of the FDH Academy of Arts and Sciences. He has been voting from day one in our Pantheon discussions that we've been doing whenever we nominate another panel for the best of the best of all time. So he has been more behind the scenes, a part of the show, stepping out today to become a dignitary in the FDH Lounge. Jason Jones is one of the original dignitaries of the FDH Lounge. He is, of course, the senior editor of FDH. And an interesting little bit of trivia. The first time I ever did a segment with Jason, and I have since done hundreds over a couple of different shows, including the FDH Lounge, first one I ever did with him involved Paul. This was back in the day when we were all at the Sports Talk Network. For whatever reason, Jason and I were placeholders for Nate Noy, our colleague at the time, for a pilot of a show called Hold'em or Fold'em, a show about poker, largely Texas Hold'em. And it was with Nate Noy and Paul Teeple. Well, Jason and I, as I said, were the stand-ins on that occasion for Nate, and we needed basically a poker player to come on there with us. We were going to be demonstrating some things for the webcam, and Paul volunteered to do that, was nice enough to be on the show with us. And again, that's literally the first time I ever did a segment with Jason, and much has come out of it ever since then. Over the course of the last 2 years or so, this has been sort of the Manhattan Project of the 21st Century Media Alliance, so I can't get too much into it, but Jason has a really great project that he is working on in the comics realm, and Paul and I have been advising him on it. And I can't speak much on it other than the entire world is going to know about this at some point. But again, the discussions we've been having through the course of this, some conference calls that we've been doing, you can just hear it when Paul and Jason are drawing on their reservoir of knowledge and experience with comic books, comic book movies, etc. So they're the perfect panel for today's program. So I bring you FDH Lounge dignitary Paul Pasek. Paul, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks. How about you?
Doing just fine, my friend. Jason Jones coming on with us. Jason, how are you doing, my friend?
Great. Any day we have an opportunity to nerd out a little bit is always a good day.
This is awesome. And as I alluded to, with our Manhattan Project thing that we've been working on that we can't get too much into, I have been privy to some conference call discussions with the two of you guys and just hearing you go back and forth on comic books, comic book movies, and drawing upon that for something that we're working on. But I knew that would be tremendous for breaking down this summer's slate of movies. Jason, I'm kind of letting you take the lead on this. You had set out what you thought was going to be the best line of order for these movies. We're going to be getting into Iron Man 3, Man of Steel, Star Trek, Thor, and Wolverine. And I believe you said in that order. So let's start with Iron Man 3.
I'm Tony Stark. I build neat stuff. I got a great girl. And occasionally, save the world. So why can't I sleep?
The Mandarin must be stopped.
You don't know who I am.
These attacks.
The question, where is Tony Stark?
Things are different now. I have to protect the one thing that I can't live without.
That's you.
Today is the first day of what's left of your life. I'm gonna offer the choice. Do you want
an empty life for a meaningful death.
I'm not afraid of you. No politics here. Just good old-fashioned revenge.
We do need backup.
That's your department.
Here's my boys.
Iron Man 3 audio, courtesy of Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures.
That one is coming out shortly. Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, Don Cheadle are going to be involved in that one again as part of the franchise. And I know you said in your notes that you expected this to tie into the ongoing Avengers saga.
Yeah, and first off, with the exception of Star Trek, it's almost like this is the summer of redemption. And what I mean by that, just to gloss over, most people absolutely loved the first Iron Man. Second one, not as much, but it was Iron Man, so it was still pretty good. Thor 1 was a little convoluted, but we needed the background story. Anything that even starts with the words X-Men Origins Wolverine is going to make any fanboy a little nauseous. And then Superman, good God. We're just waiting for one good Superman movie, like, ever. So, anyway, putting that out there, there's a lot of sort of bounce back, and we're hoping that these movies make up for the previous ones. So, with Iron Man 3, aside from it being Iron Man 3, it's the third of the series. We're led to believe sort of the climax of a trilogy. I'm more inclined to believe that Robert Downey Jr. will sign a new contract and we'll have, Iron Man 5 someday. But we're talking about the first movie of what is loosely referred to as Phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Captain America and again in Avengers. You heard the term Phase 2 being weaponry, and it also brings in this part of it. What's interesting is Iron Man 3 is unlike Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2, is sort of a Tony Stark introspective. This is an opportunity for us to see more of the man, which is interesting. And naturally, I want to warn everybody, there will be some spoilers mentioned here. So listen, absolutely. Unlike the websites, I'm not going to tell you to stop listening, but some good information. Very much a Tony Stark movie, even though Kevin Feige, I believe is how you pronounce it, the president of production for Marvel Studios and a producer on all of the Marvels, described this movie, wait for it, as a Pepper Potts movie. She's going to play an integral role. In the beginning, we see Tony Stark sort of stripped of everything, which is another thing that Feige is in love with, the idea of taking away his toys and taking away his resources, painting him into a corner and watching him and his beautiful mind sort of create a way out. That'll happen in the first act. And then as we come back around, Pepper Potts will become a little bit more integral, as well as a third lady of interest. I'm led to believe that she is a former fling and not anything that Pepper needs to worry about. But as we move along into that second act, we're going to start to see all these pieces sort of come together. There's new suits. There's new tech in general. And all of that comes to a head at the term we're using as the Iron Legion, a grouping of Iron Man suits. Let your mind marinate that for a second. Up until now, we've only seen one suit, with the exception of War Machine or anything involving Rhodey. We're now going to see essentially an army of Iron Man suits. Some of those you can find online. It's really not very hard. My favorite, they're actually referring to as the Hulkbuster. And if you've seen the Iron Man 3 trailer at the very end, that's the real big one that comes running at the, right at the screen. An army of Iron Man suits is intriguing beyond compare. Once we sort of get into the story, though, it's always been rumored that this was going to be an Iron Man extremist idea, and that is to sum it up very, very rudimentarily. There's a new science out there that Tony was not aware of, which plays into this whole introspective thing, the idea that Tony's not the smartest thing in the world anymore, which is going back to the whole Avengers plot when he's falling from the heavens. Maybe there's something happens that lets him know that there's a whole world of technology he didn't know about. The Extremists, actually, if you want, you can follow on Netflix currently. It's animated, but you'll get the gist of the storyline. And it brings in the Mandarin, which, if you've seen the trailer, we've seen the Mandarin. His name is Sir Ben Kingsley. Now, the most intriguing part of all of this, plotline-wise, is the Mandarin. I don't want to go into great detail what the villain is, but it's bad. And there's no doubt that it's going to take some doing to thwart. The intriguing part is when we accept the tie back into the Ten Rings. In the trailer, you see a moment where the Mandarin crosses his fingers in his hands, and you see that he's wearing Ten Rings. If we go back, first Iron Man, the terror cell that captures him, forces him to make a weapon he escaped from, also called the Ten Rings. There's no doubt a tie-in there, but what most fanboys, I think, are chomping at the bit over, and this is a little bit of a stretch, no factual emphasis on this, but the idea that the very mention of rings in an Iron Man 3 movie called The Avengers somehow hints to the Infinity Gauntlet, which deals with six gems, i.e. six rings, built into a gauntlet that Thanos will wear. If there's a connection, I can't find it, but you can't help but think about it. And the last thing I'll say on the spoiler idea, if you go and watch the trailer again, most men at least are inclined to have their attention peaked when they see Gwyneth Paltrow looking a little frustrated, wearing nothing but a black bra, which is nice, don't get me wrong. But that alone doesn't say anything. However, after doing a little digging, I've discovered that indeed she's wearing only a bra for a reason. I thought it had to do because she was woken up by an Iron Man suit in her sleep. But more importantly, and this I think is probably the biggest thing, Pepper Potts will don her own Iron Man suit, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's what I thought too when I saw the preview.
What's really interesting about that, if you go back to the trailer again, is you're at the end of it, you have you've got Rhodey, who will be the Iron Patriot, which for those that aren't as in the loop, is an Iron Man suit that looks like it was made for Captain America. It's the War Machine that's been, you know, changed up a little bit. Anyway, you have Stark and Rhodey flying towards a destination. They're there, and then Stark says, we need backup, and Rhodey says, that's your department. And then Tony Stark looks over his shoulder and says, they're my boys. Interesting, considering his woman is one of the boys. That's really about all I'm willing to give up at this point, or at least stake any reputation on. The last thing I'll say, in great Marvel form, we've got to believe that there's something at the end, something that tips to the next point, and the timeline fits. But the idea is, all along, that Tony Stark isn't the smartest guy, you know, in the universe anymore, and maybe there's stuff he still needs to know, and there is some rumbling that Tony Stark, who built a suit, the Mark, I want to say 48, the deep space armor, will actually venture into space where he will interact with the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is already greenlit for principal photography this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, I want to get some sense of what Paul thinks about this. I'm sure he's been sitting there jotting down notes from the setup. Before I do, just quickly, tell me how superficial this question is, and don't be afraid to answer with very, but when you mention about some of the toys getting taken away for at least part of the movie here, I'm thinking to myself, Tony Stark, like Bruce Wayne, rich guy with the toys. You look at the most recent Batman movie. Those were taken away for at least a good part of the time. I mean, does it appear to borrow in any even small way from the most recent Batman movie with that theme of having to overcome the loss of the tools that you generally have?
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. And I'm going to say not really, not so much.
Okay.
Because in a sense, Bruce Wayne finds himself in that situation, and it's, you know, not to peg on the emotional side of it, but we're talking about a guy that had losses at the root of his core. So, you know, when in The Dark Knight Rises, he's left in the prison in the cave, and he has to spend all his time trying to get out of the cave. I mean, the difference here is he does it, whereas Iron Man looks at this as almost an opportunity to escape who Tony Stark is and to just, you know, take it back to being a kid with the ingenuity and creativity to understand science the way he does. He almost looks at it as a challenge, and he really enjoys it. I would not be surprised if we see him go from, you know, depressed and upset at what's happening, and that's another little poke at sort of the first act. I'm not going to go into great detail on. I want to leave you with something in the movie. But once we find him in North Carolina, basically using only what he can find in a young kid's shed to work, it's almost like this is what he lives for. And it's much more of a positive, creative moment than a woe is me, my parents died, and now I'm in a cave and I need to get out and save whoever's left that I still love. If that makes any sense.
Sure, no, it does. Great compare and contrast. All right, Paul, things you're looking for in this movie, things that you anticipate, and what Jason just said, how that affected what you're looking for in any way. Take it away.
Yeah, what this could be, Rick, too, and I don't know how much they're going to follow what's in the books, but back in the day, Tony Stark had quite a few battles, and epic battles, actually, with alcoholism, and which at times knocked him down back to square one to where he had to start over. And I don't know if that'll come into the movies at all, but that was a big theme in the books for quite some time. So that's kind of where his restart came from on the books. When I watched the preview, like I said, you can tell from one of the scenes that it does look like Pepper is actually involved inside one of the suits, and that's one of the things I'm looking forward to see is how they incorporate her into the suit in the movie, because as far as I know, I don't believe she ever donned armor in the comics. I'd have to go back and check that, but just off the top of my head, I don't think she ever did. But that, even if she ever did for just a little bit, that is another great tie-in there, and that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Very, very noteworthy. That would be a first, as you say, again, to see how much they borrow from the comic books, as you pointed out, Paul, that's always very instructive as well. Next one I know that we wanted to get to is Man of Steel, which is being released June 14th in the United States.
He will give the people an ideal to strive towards. They will race behind you. They will stumble. They will fall. But in time, they will join you in the sun. In time, you will help them accomplish wonders.
Can you see it?
I see it.
My son was in the bus. He saw what Clark did.
You have to keep this side of yourself a secret.
What was I supposed to do? Just let him die?
Maybe.
I have so many questions. Where do I come from?
You just have to decide what kind of man you want to grow up to be, Clark. Whoever that man is, he's going to change the world.
My father believed that if the world found out who I really was, they'd reject me. He was convinced that the world wasn't ready. What do you think?
Man of Steel audio, courtesy of Warner Brothers Pictures.
And again, Jason, as you were saying, we've been waiting to see the Superman saga done right on the big screen. So there's a lot of hopes and dreams being placed on this one here to see if it can break through and really do that.
Yeah, for all that is sacred and holy among the fanboy nation, this one's got to work. We have everyone knows somebody who's a big Superman fan, and this just, it has to work. I don't know how many times we can go and just say that. Now, Christopher Reeve, first Superman, for its time, fine. Incredible. I even thought Spawn was good at its time when it first came out. We'll probably not watch it now. But point is, they've got to be true to the story. They've got to not belittle some of the details that are important. And some of those details, not that hard to find, even though the trailer is trying very hard not to give you anything, which is typical. But this is not a spoiler. This is just, you know, if you go on Yahoo.com, you can probably find this. The key bad guy is General Zod. Now, that right there should throw up an exponential amount of red flags, because we've not quite seen a solid Superman movie since Christopher Reeve. I don't even know that the animated features are even all that great for Superman. But when you say General Zod, that invokes a certain expectation. Now, I like what I've seen from the stills of the action sequences with General Zod, Ursa, and even Non. Even though they don't show those two, we have to know that they're there. And everything I've read leads to the idea that not only will there be a fight that's developed from General Zod venturing to Earth in search for Kal-El, and then discovers that his secret identity is Clark Kent, and there's a big knockout, drag-out fight at Kent Farm in the beginning, and then a much bigger, more impactful fight sequence that will happen towards the end with General Zod, Ursa, and Non. And if you don't know who those are, go back to the Christopher Reeves. Those are the three people in black leather that were imprisoned in the glass thing that come back to wreak havoc on a small town. The important thing to take from this, detail-wise, is sort of in the cryptic nature of the trailer. Before we go, let's make no bones about something. When they made X-Men, when they make Batman, when they make Iron Man, Captain America, Green Lantern, I don't care what it is, all of them have a very sort of still typical look to them, even if they futurize it a little bit. What I don't like, and I'm not going to like, no matter how good or bad the movie is I think they made a huge misstep in the outfit. I think they went way too dark with it. I don't need to see little metal thingies pointing to his supposed, what my wife would call, the Jesus V that, like, the GQ models have when they wear pants too low. I don't need that. I would rather have seen something that's more of your traditional royal blue and crimson red, or even a varsity red. But getting past the outfit, in the trailer, there are some details that allude to the idea of it almost abandoning the other Supermen to this point, specifically Returns. And that idea comes in the language and specific rhetoric of Kevin Costner's voiceover in the middle of the trailer, where he's, you know, saying you've got to hide this side of you, and then Clark comes back with, should I have just let them die? And Mr. Kent says, yeah, maybe. So you get an idea that's a little bit darker. Then, and this is a quote that points to the big decision. My father believed I needed to keep who I was a secret. He believed the world wasn't ready for me. I think what that's pointing to is the idea that at some point, Clark, who knows Lois, who knows him as Superman, maybe, has to come to grips with the idea that maybe we, the mere mortals, need him now, whether we are ready for him or not, if that makes any sense. And the reason I say that is the stuff that's starting to trickle out now is of a great military focus. You see shots of Superman being walked away in handcuffs, which we all know wouldn't last if he didn't want it to. There's the idea that there's going to be a person in very high-ranking level in the military who's going to become a problem, and that General Zod may, in fact, decimate the U.S. military, making this big climactic fight at the end Superman versus General Zod, Ursa, and Non for the sake of the planet or the country or whatever. So we're starting to at least flirt with the idea, for those of you who want to reject this movie based on how bad Return was, that there will not only be action, more than saving a plane and taking a bullet in the eye, there will be fights, plural, one of which may be on an epic scale for the sanctity of the country, if not the world.
Well, that's an awful lot to look forward to, certainly. And I have to laugh when you mention about how they're trying not to give anything away in the trailer. As a Mad Men fan, I think of Matthew Weiner, who is infamous for misleading next week on Mad Men. And it you'll see Don Draper saying, "That's the worst thing ever." And it turns out to be somebody mixed him a martini that tastes bad or something like that. They try to never, ever give anything away on that. Paul, what are you thinking? This is the big one here, Superman, probably the most famous of all of the superheroes out there. Again, people have been waiting a long time for a good Superman movie to materialize. After listening to everything Jason said there, what are your thoughts?
Right. Well, the whole General Zod and the Phantom Zone villains, the whole deal, that comes from the Superman 2, which I think holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts just because of bringing in those characters. And even though I don't know if it stands the test of time today with the updates and special effects and things like that, I think that's what a lot of people see and remember, is that, you know, he's facing off with these villains. So I think that's going to be a big draw for a lot of people. And when I was watching the trailer too, I thought it was interesting too, like Jason said, that they are kind of taking a darker slant to it, because they hear Paul Kent say, "Maybe you should have let him die." That's something I don't think we've ever seen or heard before. It was always like, you've got to, you know, do everything you can to protect, you know, people. But and they're also shedding light on that he's got to protect himself and his secret identity, too. So that's a very interesting angle there.
Well, one last thing before, and this is actually maybe the most fun aspect. Anyone who saw The Amazing Spider-Man, so the final scene during the credits, and you have to know that that's Norman Osborn. I mean, there's really no other way to take that. But this idea,
right,
that we've watched the entire movie, we understand that Norman Osborn exists in this universe, but we're not going to see him. And at the very end, we see a shadow and a voice, and they say, whatever, right? There is some rumbling at this point now that while we are following this General Zod storyline completely, before the final credit rolls, in some capacity, we will see or at least hear from Lex Luthor.
Okay.
That seems kind of obligatory, doesn't it? I mean, you guys know a lot more about the whole Superman saga than I do, but that does seem like something people would be expecting at some point.
I think absolutely. It's just that Superman Returns, even though Lex is in that movie, is so bad that, like, it's almost like they didn't even bother teasing what's happening next. And at least it shows a good faith gesture to say, we've gone so far development-wise that we at least know what, you know, part two looks like, and that we're not going to wait and see how it's received before we decide if we're going to continue this.
Right, because in the first Christopher Reeve Superman, I mean, that was all about Lex Luthor, and, you know, and that was all front and center. So for them not to have to use that in the beginning here, that's a nice change of pace. But, yeah, I think it would almost have to tease him for the next one. It would almost have to be that way.
How about that? We're even giving you something to look forward to going forward with this saga. And speaking of sagas with continuing parts, that takes us to our next one, which is Star Trek Into Darkness, release date in the United States May 17th, to be directed by J.J. Abrams, who is no stranger to this saga, Chris Pine as Kirk, and Zachary Quinto as Spock.
You have any idea what a pain you are?
I think so, sir.
You think the rules don't apply to you because you disagree with them?
By now, all of you have heard what happened in London. The man who did it,
he was one of our top agents.
Your commanders have committed a crime I cannot forgive.
He's a fugitive and I want to take him out.
You think your world is safe? It is an illusion. Enjoy these final moments of peace.
This could just be the beginning. I request permission to go after him.
Starfleet is not about vendetta, Kirk.
Maybe it should be, sir.
Have I got your attention now?
I watched you murder innocent men and women.
None of you are safe.
I will make you answer for what you did.
I will walk over your cold corpses.
Jim, you're not actually going after this guy, are you? I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. I only know what I can do.
We're outgunned. Outnumbered.
So we come out shooting.
I am better.
At what?
Everything.
3, 2, 1.
Punch it. Tell me this is gonna work.
I believe in you.
Come on, it's gonna be fine.
Star Trek Into Darkness audio, courtesy of Paramount Pictures.
So, Jason, in looking at this, this is where we start to step away a little bit from the comics here, a little bit more into the sci-fi realm as we take a look at this movie. This is a franchise dating back to the 80s in different forms on the big screen. What are you looking for in this one?
I feel like we should have trumpets playing, because this, unless Man of Steel pulls something out of their keister, I really think it's going to be the best movie of the year. From where I stand currently. But anyway, Star Trek Into Darkness, I got to be honest, at first glance, I was at a complete loss but didn't care because visually it was everything you come to expect from a J.J. Abrams big budget project like this. And up until Avengers, I'd probably say that the 2009 release of Star Trek was at least in my top three of most favorite movies to watch, experience-wise. There's an interesting thing happening here with Star Trek, and this is the most important factor when gauging this. Going back to Star Trek Motion Picture, which is god-awful, you watch it because you have to watch it, but you probably never watch it again. Then Wrath of Khan, Search for Spock, so on and so forth. You get through the original cast, and then we transition over to the Next Generation movies, where in Generations, we tweak the timeline ever so slightly, and we see Kirk and Stewart together, and it's kind of weird, and we don't understand it. But anyway, you watch that whole thing, it's enjoyable, and then there's this big break, and then we don't have Star Trek movies for a while, like 10, 15 years. Then the Star Trek 2009 release comes, and it is bigger than we expected, and you're on this ride, and then all of a sudden, there's whether it's J.J. Abrams' idea or the writing staff, whoever, somebody went, you know, we can absolutely squash expectation and keep the fans happy if we completely skew the timeline. And this is, for people that don't follow, think of Back to the Future 2. You have the realistic timeline that everybody knows, the 1985 that everybody knows, then some event occurs causing a shift in that timeline, creating a parallel and alternate reality where Biff is, you know, rich and famous, and it's this bad thing that they have to fix. It's a similar idea. By infusing future Spock into this timeline and adjusting with the black hole and all this nonsense, we now can say, going forward, we don't have to pay homage to, we do not have to respect the original timeline because we've changed it. And that in itself speaks volumes to where they can go with Into Darkness. However, even though that's the case, we still find some similarities and some things that are a little throwback. For instance, I jokingly refer to people with this as Captain Kirk and Spock have to stave off terror from Sherlock Holmes. And for those that don't get that reference, Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays Sherlock Holmes on the BBC series that's currently running now, is our bad guy. There are some that speculated that we are actually trying to follow a similar timeline, so our next villain should be Khan, which is fine, but I don't know that you can do Khan and do it justice, not considering its original run. So, there are many that believe, and Carl Urban kind of had a slip of the tongue and led this on the path I'm going to take you on here, that Benedict Cumberbatch's character is actually Gary Mitchell, who is from, like, the third episode ever of, you know, like, 1980 or whatever it was, the first season. It's actually considered to be the second pilot, where he is essentially just another Starfleet officer. Bad things happen, and Kirk exiles him to the far reaches of the universe where he is able to develop some sort of cerebral superpower. The conflict there being that mortal men don't have the physical or mental capacity to handle powers of this nature. So he returns to essentially wage war on the Federation, specifically the home of the Federation, San Francisco, creating this massive destruction where we are at a loss both emotionally and militarily, if you consider the Federation in this analogy, in a point where Kirk, being Kirk, who can't follow rules and regulations to the letter because he doesn't agree with it, decides to take matters into his own hands, takes his crew out, and we start to see this epic battle, which was started in episode 3 of the original series. We are then allowing J.J. Abrams to take the ball and run with it. Some interesting things is that, similar to Loki in Avengers, I get the impression that Cumberbatch's character is going to allow himself to be captured, and almost in a followers slash law-abiding citizen sort of way, cause the beginning stages of the chaos while still in prison. And then, of course, the bigger undertone is that we have to build on the characters. We have to sort of bring you inside, and there is some thought that this will be one of those movies where Kirk and Spock start to bond a little bit more, and Spock is less able to shield his emotional side, being half human and half Vulcan. He tries to always shelter or disguise his emotions with his Vulcan logicness. We're going to see some of that probably creep out a little bit. And maybe Uhura becomes a little bit more involved. They seem to, with all their media push, really be pushing Uhura in the imagery. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, but it's a J.J. Abrams film. And with that, I'll leave with this. I have all the faith in the world in J.J. Abrams' ability to create this universe and do it well. My concern comes in the fact that Disney bought the rights to Star Wars, and J.J. Abrams has already signed up for Star Wars. So, big question is, it's going to be great, but the question is, does Into Darkness sort of bring an end to the J.J. Abrams Star Trek universe, or is he graciously, in the greater good of nerddom, going to set this up for whoever follows, whether it's him or somebody else? So there is a little scary thing in the back saying, please don't just drop the ball at the end. You know, we got to set this up because it's Star Trek. The thing's going to go like 20 movies deep before we're all done. So I believe in J.J. I just hope that he does the right thing as far as setting up the third of the new series.
Okay. Paul, what do you think? Any concerns? What are your overall thoughts on this one coming out?
Yeah, Jason touches on a good point there, Rick, that, I mean, these are beloved franchises, Star Trek, Star Wars, and for them to just, you know, for Abrams to just touch that and then move on to Star Wars, that could happen. We'll have to see what that does. But, I mean, you've got such huge fan bases here that that's why somebody has to really carefully work with these things so you're not going to alienate these, you know, legions and legions of fans. So that's kind of the tightrope that he's got to walk in, you know, initially from day one. And like Jason says, this could be an ongoing, you know, 20 movie franchise, a la even, you know, the James Bond series, you know, that's also another beloved franchise. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
Absolutely, yeah. These are sacred things to the fan bases here. You can't just jerk with them. In our remaining time, which is not much, we got about 7 minutes left for the last two we are going to talk about, but I don't think we're going to devote as much time to them anyways. Start with Thor here.
Listen well, brother.
I'm listening.
I need a horse!
We don't have horses, just dogs, cats, birds.
And give me one of those large enough to ride.
She could smell crazy on him.
Have care how you speak. Loki is beyond reason, but he is of Asgard, and he is my brother.
He killed 80 people in 2 days.
He's adopted.
This drink, I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
Put that hammer down.
No.
Bad call. He loves his
You want me to put the hammer down?
Do not touch me again.
Then don't take my stuff.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Shakespeare in the Park?
Doth mother know you weareth her drapes?
This is beyond you, metal man.
It's not easy to do what you did. You made my man look like a bunch of minimum wage mall cops. Who are you?
You have opened these peaceful realms and innocent lives to the horror and devastation of war.
Where'd he come from?
Your ancestors called it magic. And you call it science. I come from a place where they're one and the same. I will end this.
The Dark World audio courtesy of Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures.
Jason, your thoughts on the next one being released in that series, which is, of course, Thor, The Dark World.
Well, let me just start with this. I actually went back and watched the first Thor because I've been kind of critical about it. It was the kind of movie when at your theater you just want to see the Asgard scenes. You don't really care about New Mexico. When you go back, you watch again. It's actually better than I remember it. However, there's this stigma that it wasn't as good as it could have been. So, at the end of the first Thor, the Bifrost has been destroyed, so we don't really have a way, short of Odin summoning Thor to Earth as he did in the Avengers, it's not like we have this way to transport Thor back and forth freely. Now, Loki is still involved. How he gets out of captivity or capture, I don't know, but at some point, Loki is supposed to meet up with a villain I am not as familiar with, to be brutally honest about it, and run another sort of, I want to borrow your army to destroy my not brother. So with that, you essentially have Thor more or less trapped in Asgard, with or without Odin, as of yet, Anthony Hopkins has not signed on to do it, but, you know, it's Marvel Disney. They could probably just throw more money at him. But the idea here is Loki and this army of essentially alien race that far precedes even the existence of Asgard is trying to essentially take over all of the nine realms simultaneously, creating a dark universe to blanket with and then do with as they see fit. There is a way that we bring back the original Asgardian, you know, royal army, of, including Thor, the other five characters whose names escape me at the moment, who are basically charged with defending Asgard and the other eight realms from this utter darkness that will consume all. As far as spoilers go, I can tell you that Jane Foster is in the movie. There is a rumor that somehow one of the other Avengers will make an appearance. I don't see how that works, but maybe it's possible. But there's really not much happening, and some of that's due to the fact that the movie doesn't release till November. But it looks like it will be at least the vast majority of time spent in Asgard.
Yeah, this is not really one of the summer movies as we had billed it, but it is coming out this year. It is going to be notable. Paul, what do you think? Does it sound pretty sweet to you? How do you think it's going to shape up?
Yeah, I think it is going to take off a little bit more than the first one. Like Jason said, the first one, we had to have a lot of backstory because Thor, even though he's gaining in popularity here, he was always bigger in the books, in the comic books, than he was in anything else. So not as many people know of him like they do of Spider-Man, Superman, X-Men, things like that. So, yeah, I think, you know, people are going to be more, you know, drawn to maybe the second Thor movie just because of the popularity of Thor in how big the Avengers movie was last year. So I think that's going to help overall.
That definitely sounds like something to look forward to. We got about 4 minutes to go here. Having said that, at Jason's off-air suggestion, Paul, I'm just going to drop this last one in your lap, Wolverine, because you were just about the biggest X-Men guy I've ever known. And again, so
thank you.
Who better to tee off on this than you?
Eternity can be a curse. The losses you have had to suffer. A man can run out of things to live for. Lose his purpose. That hurt.
I wouldn't bother with them. My employer is dying. He wants to thank you for saving his life. It's an honor to meet the Wolverine.
That's not who I am anymore. I wanted to repay you. A gift to equal the life you gave me. You have struggled long enough. I can make you mortal.
Not healing it before.
What the hell is happening? What they did to me, what I am, can't be undone. Don't be so sure.
Wolverine audio, courtesy of 20th Century Fox.
It's going to be coming out. He's going to be apart from the X-Men crew in this one, built around him. Hugh Jackman, of course, starring in it once again. What are your thoughts as a huge X-Men guy on this new Wolverine movie?
Yeah, from looking at the trailers, I think it's going to live up to the hype. It's a big part of... And because they have so much history to fill in for the Wolverine character, a big part of, like, his style, so to speak, and that, yeah, possibly his fighting style, but also just his makeup is this whole honorable warrior situation, which lends itself perfectly into the whole samurai situation, his love interest, you know, being of, you know, Japanese descent. So all those things tied in hugely into all the different arcs and all the different books over the years. And if they do it right, it could also be just as big in the films. So that's what I'm looking to see him do there. Because, I mean, like I said, it was just such a big part of his makeup in the books, you know, as I was growing up and a lot of the other fans, you know, that was just a big part of it.
That is going to really be something to look forward to. And I was reading about how Hugh Jackman had contacted, of all people, The Rock, to try to learn about bulking up for a role, taking on 6,000 calories a day and what that comes down to.
Wow.
So it probably takes a lot on his part to come off convincing physically in the role, does it not?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And but that's going to be strange, too, though, because, I mean, Wolverine is not supposed to be a big, hulking, strong-type character. I mean, he's not a weakling by any means either, but he's not going to be, you know, something like we saw Hulk-wise in the Avengers movie either. So they want to be careful there that he doesn't get too big, because then that would just, it wouldn't look well and look as good for the character. But that's interesting that he went to The Rock for physique tips there.
yeah, not sure
if I
may. Yeah.
Just interject one thing, and this is completely unrelated and probably gives you more about my home life than anyone needs to hear. But anyone whose wife, significant other, or someone in their life is a big theater, musical theater fan, as my wife is, I've been forced and subjected to experience the Les Mis Blu-ray over and over and over again. And in the bonus features, they show Hugh Jackman shirtless at his physical peak of the time you're talking about, with working out with The Rock and working out 7 days a week and the calorie gain and all that. It's, I can tell you from what I've seen, he's big, but he's lean. He's not, I don't think bulky would be the word to describe it. He's
right.
Ripped, but not, he's not big, though.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we're down to our last couple of seconds, so guys, this was a real pleasure. It was as great as I knew it was going to be. We got to do it again. Jason Jones, Paul Pasek, Rick Morris for the FDH Lounge today. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.